I'm going to introduce Dr. Paul Yoder, who's a professor in special education at Vanderbilt University. And we're working together on a multi-site project, and it's fantastic to work with Paul. What a scientist. He's been conducting efficacy studies with a particular interest in moderators of between treatment group differences for almost 30 years. His current populations of interest are Down syndrome and autism spectrum disorders. So please join me in giving Dr. Yoder a welcome.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here with this great panel. I'm honored. I'm not sure we're going to get slides today. So you're going to come back? I do have a tablet. Would you like me to bring it up and try to use that?
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is do a little bit of ad-libbing. And the reason that this might work is I want you to think about some of the patterns that you might hear in our speech. Language matters. It influences the way we think. And one of the things that I want you to know from the first is something about patterns that we see in treatment effects. Now, treatment effects are, it's the amount of change that we can confidently ascribe to a treatment. That's what a treatment effect is. It is not the amount of change within a treated group. And one way we can know that is that when we look at randomized controlled trials and then take a meta-analysis of these studies, particularly when the outcome is a generalized characteristic or a skill, in other words, an aspect of development or achievement, then the mean effect size is 1. The Cohen's D is 1. Now, that's important to know because if you look at a translation of D to R square, the proportion of variance accounted for, you need a Cohen's D of 2.0 to have an R square of 0.5, which tells us that almost always when our outcome is a generalized characteristic, a minority of the change is due to the treatment. And this is true even when we see significant differences between groups. And that's really important to know when we think about why a treatment works and for whom a treatment works. Treatment works. That's a causal influence. So the first thing I want you to think about is, okay, so correlates of change within a treated group don't necessarily tell us about mechanisms of change, nor do they necessarily tell us about for whom a treatment works. Okay, so I've got some slides here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about mediators and moderators, what I consider to be a better way to look at why a treatment works and for whom a treatment works. The mediators is the why. And one way to look at mediators, to use a statistical term of a mediation, is to think about the mechanisms that a treatment can work. That's what occurs within the human brain, for example, some of the things that Patricia talked about. And then moderators are the for whom treatment works. I'll be talking about both of these concepts. So one of the great things about a between-group experiment, which is a design that is very useful to look at mediators and moderators, is it allows us to pull apart or partition the variance that's more confidently attributed to the treatment, to what's manipulated between the two groups. Without that design element, it's very difficult to be very confident that a treatment is due to a mediator, a mechanism, or that there are characteristics of people along which the continuum of that characteristic that the between group differences vary. We'll talk about that as a moderator. But first I want to kind of set up some examples for you. Now I've used examples from the Down syndrome population, a couple of studies that I've done with this group of also really interesting children. people with Down syndrome. And I'll be focusing on two different outcomes and two different contrast or treatment comparisons. The first comparison is a daily treatment versus a weekly treatment. The kind of treatment is milieu communication teaching. It is another kind of routines-based intervention, in some ways very similar to some aspects of Early Start Denver model. And we'll be looking at expressive vocabulary as the outcome in this particular study, because expressive vocabulary is very hard for these kids with Down syndrome to learn. They have a hard time learning to speak. Much more difficult than you would expect given their IQ and mental age. And then we'll also be looking at two different therapies, one that's kind of new, one that's very traditional, on a very difficult aspect of speech for children with Down syndrome, and that's making themselves understood. Okay, so now that we're on the same page in terms of what I mean by treatment effect, I'm not just talking about change within a group. This notion of a mechanism is something that occurs within the participant. We're not talking about an active ingredient of a treatment. We're talking about a mechanism within a participant's mind that's at least partly responsible for this treatment effect on a functional outcome. And I'm using functional outcome mainly because that's what I'm interested in. So I'm kind of giving you an idea of what I'm interested in. I know that this isn't the only reason to look for mechanisms, what I have on the screen here. What I have on the screen is why I look for them. I'm a clinical scientist. I'm interested in part in mechanisms because I want to know why my treatments work so that I can think more precisely about treatments that I'm testing. When we think more precisely about treatments, we can help articulate more accurately why we're asking, let's say, teachers or parents or staff members to do a certain part of our treatment package. So, for example, if I'm interested in a treatment that affects children learning how to speak, and I think that my treatment works in part by increasing the efficiency of their lexical access, and maybe that occurs because they get many exposures to the same word within a social context that they can process, then I'm going to be thinking, okay, so part of what I need to do is to get my adults to use perhaps a limited set of words many times for a period of time instead of spreading out my interventionist words across many words where only one instance occurs, because that's one way that we increase lexical access. But of course there's another reason why probably most of you, or at least many of you, would want to know about mechanisms. You remember that cartoon where you have these two mathematicians, and you have the younger mathematician with this very complex mathematical formula. And then at the very other side of the board, it has the result. And in the middle, it says, a miracle occurs. Well, that's a lot of what we feel when we do treatments if we don't know about mechanisms. We can speculate many of the mechanisms that were very well articulated by Sally about why our treatments might work. But sometimes it feels like it's a miracle. Of course, it's not a miracle. It's just that we don't yet understand exactly how the social environment might influence the brain to change in these ways that results in development. So, of course, that's one of the main reasons that a scientist, not just a clinician like myself, would want to know about mechanisms. Of course, I'm a scientist too, but I'm mainly a clinician. So the statistical method by which we identify these mechanisms is a mediational analysis. I'm going to talk a little bit about this because there are some improvements that our field can make in terms of connecting these mechanisms with treatments and their functional outcome. And I hope that talking a little bit about this will help us be more committed to doing that. So what a mediational analysis allows us to do is it allows us to show that a treatment package, like ESDM, has an impact on an outcome, a functional outcome, like learning to speak. And that outcome, sorry, that treatment effect should become smaller when we control for the mechanism. By controlling for the mechanism, what I mean by that is we're partialing it out. We're statistically controlling it. I talked to some philosophy students once, and I said, so how would you explain the idea that this mechanism is at least in part responsible for this treatment effect on the functional outcome? And they said, well, the treatment effect would become smaller if you removed it. So that's just a philosophical way to think about the logic that's behind mediational analysis. We're removing that effect statistically in a mediational analysis when we statistically control for it. So here's an example of one of the treatment effects that I looked at in children with Down syndrome. So I looked at daily exposure to milieu communication teaching versus weekly exposure to milieu communication teaching. Interesting contrast, because weekly is mainly, maybe maximum, of what many kids with Down syndrome under 3 get in many states. That's certainly true in Tennessee, which is where I live. Daily isn't 25 hours. It's not 15 hours. It's not 40 hours. It's only 5 hours. Isn't this modest? Can't we get advocacy groups perhaps to change our policy to help us provide this for children with Down syndrome if it works? First, we need to see if it works. And this was an attempt to do that. So this treatment effect that I will show you in a minute on expressive vocabulary, we're going to call C. That's just a way to designate that in mediational analysis. So these kids with Down syndrome there are two groups here. One is low dose frequency and one is high dose frequency. The top line of this of these rows are the low dose frequency. The high dose frequency is the bottom line of each of these rows. And you can see that they're very well matched. They're randomly assigned to these two different dosages. And these are just some of the 20 pretreatment variables that we looked at to look at pretreatment equivalents. One that I want to call your attention to is that the number of words that children used before the treatment began was around 1. And this is by parent report. And the difference in the number of words understood is not significant. So let me talk to you just a little bit about this somewhat complex graph. These are growth curves. This is a linear growth curve as a function of time and study. And on the vertical axis, we have the number of words that the parent says that the child is using. The red lines, they are three representative growth trajectories, are the high dose frequency group. The blue lines are the low dose frequency group. Within the red, there are three different IQ representations, the mean for the sample, one standard deviation for that sample mean above the mean, and one standard deviation below that sample mean. So you can see that regardless of IQ, dose frequency shifted the trajectory of growth in expressive language. Yay! But we want to know why this happens. We want to know, did a miracle occur? Probably not. So an example that we thought of was that this increase in vocabulary as a function of dose frequency may have occurred because we've shifted the proportion of children's communication acts towards speech-like vocalizations early in the treatment phase. We attempted to do that. That was our intent. I say speech-like vocalizations or speech-like communication because we can't understand the children only 3 months after the treatment begins. But we have noticed that children are shifting in the number of consonants, these things called canonical syllables that kids are using when they're looking at adults about an object. They're using what some people have called triadic attention in combination with these canonical syllables in our early studies. And so in this study, we wanted to know whether the treatment effect on spoken vocabulary occurred because of an earlier effect on the proportion of communication acts that are speech-like. So here's just the diagram for that. The potential mechanism or mediator are these speech-like vocalizations. The X variable, the independent variable, is the manipulation of dose frequency, and the Y variable, or the outcome, is vocabulary. So this A and B designation of effects that I'm showing you here is good to notice, because this is how we test a mediation. We multiply these two coefficients. That is the indirect effect of a treatment on an outcome. We look at the confidence interval around that product, and we see if the lower bound includes zero. If it does, we do not have an indirect effect. If it doesn't, we do have an indirect effect. And what that tells us is that there's a significant reduction, usually, in the effect of the treatment on the outcome. That is the case in what I'm about to show you. It doesn't have to be the case for there to be an indirect effect. I want to say at this point, this is a very simple mediation model. My hat is off to Jonathan Green and his group, who's about to show you a very interesting, sophisticated way to look at mediation analysis. But we're not doing this very much, even this simple look. So what we really want to know is, for example, does ESDM change the brain in ways that Dawson has looked at that is responsible for that effect on later language? We want to know whether that indirect effect through the brain changes is significant. We can do this. So the results are, we have this this standardized regression coefficient of 0.38 for the total effect of this dose frequency on spoken vocabulary. We also have a dose frequency effect on speech-like vocalizations. I've called it canonical syllabic communication here. Sorry, jargon. And then we have this B path that's really the effect of canonical syllabic communication on spoken vocabulary above and beyond the dosage effect. Okay, so that is statistically controlling for the dosage effect. And when we control for the mediator, canonical syllabic communication, the C prime, in other words, the effect of the treatment on the outcome, becomes much smaller. It went from 0.38 to 0.17. That's what should occur. So now I want to shift a little bit to moderators. It's worth talking a little bit about moderators, too, because a lot of times people will look at pre-treatment characteristics, and they'll look at correlates of those pre-treatment characteristics to growth within a treated group. And they'll say that these are predictors of response to treatment. I'm asking us not to do that. Sally did a really good job of distinguishing some earlier work that she and Dawson have done that showed that it turns out that IQ does not predict response to ESDM. It does predict gain within ESDM. What is a way to look at for whom a treatment works are moderators. They are just pre-treatment variables that describe an aspect of functioning on which children vary, that statistically interacts with group assignment in a between-group experiment to predict an outcome. So basically, the effect size of the between-group difference on the outcome varies as a function of the pre-treatment characteristic. That's what a statistical interaction is. So again, we can't use these correlates of change within a treated group because most of the change within the treated group is not due to the treatment. We have to keep intact the between-group experiment logic when we're looking at for whom a treatment works. Another common error that we see is that sometimes people will look within a subgroup, a moderator subgroup. Let's say, using the IQ idea, low IQ. And then they'll look to see if there are between-group differences in that subgroup. And they'll see if that between-group difference is significant or not. Let's say it's non-significant, which wasn't the case in Sally's work. And then they look in a high IQ subgroup and they say, yeah, there is a significant difference. That's not good enough. All that does is it tells us that that we have a significant effect that's different from zero in one subgroup, but not different from zero in another subgroup. What we need to see, and this is what a statistical interaction test, is whether the effect size has non-overlapping confidence intervals between the moderator subgroups. And that effect size is describing between treatment group differences on the dependent variable. So in the case I'm about to show you, I asked whether there were between group differences in a traditional therapy and a new therapy on improvements of speech intelligibility, where that difference between these two treatments is bigger for high verbal imitators than low verbal imitators, statistically bigger differences in these groups. So to test this, we did a study with children with Down syndrome. You don't really need to know the details, but just for those who you might be interested, broad target speech recast is a different kind of speech therapy that hasn't been used very much. We compared it with a more traditional way of helping children learn to speak more clearly that uses traditional articulation and phonological methods. There's a commercially available package called Easy Does It. We just took it off the shelf and made it our contrast treatment. These children all have Down syndrome. They are older. They are about 7 years old. You can see that on average they started the treatment with around 50% of their utterance attempts being intelligible. It's not very good for a seven-year-old. And it's way after they learned to talk. They've been talking, but unintelligibly, at least half the time. And when we say half the time, I mean this is a trained transcriber who's very used to hearing children's speech, listening hard, and being able to listen three times before they render an interpretation of what the child is trying to say. So that probably way overestimates their intelligibility in conversational speech. These groups are nicely comparable on a number of important variables before the treatment begins. So I'm showing you this illustration of a moderated treatment effect, a way to talk about for whom a treatment works, first, because I want to make a point after this. This isn't how we analyzed our data at first. It is a way to illustrate an interaction in a way that you might be used to seeing. So a lot of us are used to seeing treatment studies being looked at in these bar graphs where we see the broad target recast, I'm calling the treatment, the TX, and I'm calling EDI, the business as usual control. So the orange bar on the far right is much higher than the business as usual, and that's only true for the high verbal imitators. Those that scored at the pre-treatment measurement period, about a half a standard deviation above that sample mean. Now, how did I find that half a standard deviation? Here's an important point. We can keep that moderator continuous, and we need to do so because we lose a boatload of information when we don't. The thing that's really nice about multiple regression and its analogs is it allows us to look at a statistical interaction between treatment group and a continuous form of the moderator. We can test the statistical interaction, and then we can do something that's really important, and that's to find the cut point along that moderator at which the groups are significantly different. These are called regions of significance. Now, the reason this is really important is that when we have a continuous moderator, we can actually get statistically significant results and there be no treatment effect. Let me say that again. We can get statistically significant interaction between a moderator and a treatment group and there be no treatment effect. And this happens because we're just asking whether there are differences along the continuum between these two groups. It might be that the cut point for this region of significance is way outside of the range of your moderator. And that's a no-no. We don't extend past the data that we have, do we? Because we can sometimes see curvilinear relationships between our moderator and our outcome. The nuance of that might be a little hard to follow, but let me mention this idea. And that's that if you think about a regression line as being a running mean, it's like the mean of an outcome, gains in speech comprehensibility. It's a least square line. That's like a running mean along the continuum of a moderator. Thank you. Almost done. then we can see where do the confidence intervals around these regression lines no longer overlap. That's the region of significance. That's the bottom point of the region of significance in this study, which was 0.46 standard deviations above the mean. That's how I got that number. It's not magic, and it's not a pick-a-point approach. It is a disciplined approach to testing a hypothesis that, yes, needs to be replicated for us to use for clinical purposes, but this is what we can do. We have the technology to do this, and we have for many decades. So I've talked about mediation analysis as a way to find out why a treatment works, and moderation analysis as a way to find out for whom a treatment works. I've indicated that both of these logics rely on dependent variable differences between initially equivalent groups to infer treatment effect. And the why and for whom treatment effects isn't really revealed by looking at correlates of gain within a treated group. Thank you much. If you want to know more, this is a great test.
Well, feel free to take a question while Giacomo comes up and gets ready.
Any questions? You are fast, Jerry. Thank you. Hey.
So I just wanted to comment on the ESDM RCT with respect to the moderator, right? So what we actually found was that IQ did not moderate response to intervention.
I knew that, and I think I said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was severity of autism, right?
Well, you said, though, that it did predict a sort of rate of response or something like that.
I didn't mean that. I meant it predicted change within the group, and that's not the same. So it did not statistically interact with group. It did correlate with the amount of change within the ESDM group, right?
So basically both groups improved?
Yes.
Right?
They did.
And the lower IQ group started lower and ended lower.
Yes.
But the slopes were not different. We're not significantly different.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Exactly
just
right.
Want to make that. And then, but ADOS severity score did moderate.
It did.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that. I meant to say exactly that. And it's kind of nice that came up because it iterates a point. Thank you.